No, I'm not for sale.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts Cast, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me here on another live Colts Cast. Should be a very good one, very informative, as we've got a couple of great guests on tonight. Andrew Aziz is joining me from our fellow website here, stampedeblue.com. That's the only one you guys are checking out for all your news and notes and stuff on the Colts. So, Andrew, what's up, man? Thanks for joining.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me on again. This is going to be a very interesting show, I think.
I agree. We've got a lot to talk about. Most notably, we've got to talk about the new Colts head coach hire, Frank Reich. It's about time. I mean, the Colts did kind of get through this pretty quick, though, didn't they, Andrew? I mean, Ballard did not waste a whole lot of time. He got all the interviews lined up really well. You know, all of that came, you know, pretty quickly. And I think that we should all say that we were pretty impressed with what actually came of it. I mean, are you happy with it? I know that I am.
Well, it's just kind of funny how it all worked out. It's almost like Ballard had it's like he knew this was going to happen, so he had everything lined up already. It was just so, like, it seemed like him and the organization moved on so quickly after McDaniels pulled the plug on them. And to get Frank Reich, and we're going to talk about it a lot more throughout the show, I think it was just such a, the best possible thing that could have happened out of this whole mess.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that when you get a guy like Frank Reich in here that's got all the connections that he's got throughout the league, he's been in a few different spots. He was with the Colts, the Chargers, you know, and most notably lately, he was with the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think that we've got a lot to look forward to with him. I think that, you know, what we can expect from him is going to be something that we wouldn't have expected, I don't think, necessarily from McDaniels. We knew that McDaniels was going to come in. We knew that he was going to call the plays. We knew that he had an innovative offense, and we didn't really know much about everything else. We didn't know how he was going to be able to handle personnel. We didn't know how he was going to be able to handle the kind of the leader of men qualities of the head coaching position, you know. And I think that a lot of what we were seeing, at least from what we were expecting to see from that kind of a hire, was not exactly what we're going to see from Frank Reich. I think that we end up finding, I think, a leader of men. And I think that we've got, you know, a pretty good head coach right now. And I think a lot of Colts fans are happy with it. Andrew, what do you think?
Yeah, a couple things about Frank. He's never been a play caller in his 4 years of offensive coordinator with the Eagles and the Chargers. So I'm very curious to see if he's going to call the plays, or if he's going to have his OC call the plays. I'm going to assume right now his OC is going to call the plays, but that's something to note. And the other thing I'm going to say is, I had a great point and I completely forgot what it was. I'm happy that he knows the Ursays and he knows the organization and he knows the city. There's a level of comfort that he already has with Indianapolis. He spent 5 years with the Colts. He, again, knows the organization, knows the Ursays. He probably has his dinner spots in the city. So it's like he has that comfort with the city, which I really, really like, especially with a new coach to already have that level of comfort. So I really, I thought that was just that alone is, you know, makes me enjoy this hire a lot more. And another point I'll say too is, I just had another great point. I completely forgot again too. Matt, this is not a good start, man. It's not a good start.
Let me tell everybody that first of all, our show is brought to you guys by Earnest Realty Group. If you guys are in the market to buy or sell a home, give Mike Earnest and his team at Earnest Realty Group a call. Mike and his team of real estate professionals are experts in the greater Indianapolis real estate market, and they've helped people just like you achieve the real estate goals. So go out and get Mike Earnest a call. Really a good dude, making moves and everything else. And also on the show tonight, we've got a great guest. We got Michael Kist. He's joining us right now on the Earnest Realty Group hotline. Michael, what's going on, man?
Hey, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Great to have you.
Hi, Michael.
We've got some questions for you, obviously. Like, we've got a little bit of familiarity with Frank Reich and kind of his past, but feel free to go in detail about what maybe we should expect from him, you know, being the offensive coordinator and kind of that little that three-headed monster there in Philadelphia this year with DeFilippo, him, and Peterson. You know, they all had different roles. What exactly did Frank Reich do, and what did he have to do with the preparation? What was, you know, kind of his role within that offense?
Yeah, he was part of the install, and to understand the relationship between all three, okay? Peterson is the straw that stirs the drink, and then you have Frank Reich, who is involved with the install and game planning of everything from the 20-yard line to the 20-yard line, and the third down plays as well. And then Flip would take the red zone install, so he was the mastermind behind that red zone offense. However, that third down offense that the Eagles had, that Frank Reich had a very big part in, was tops in the league until you get to week 16, week 17. We had clinched already. We started to show a more vanilla offense, and we slipped to second in the league on third down conversions. But as you saw in the playoffs, the Eagles converted 60% of their third downs, including, I believe it was 10 for 14, starting out 9 for 11 against the most historic Vikings defense, the third down defense that only allowed 25% conversion during the regular season. So he was a big part of that. Also, the development of Carson Wentz, Flip gets a lot of credit for that. Reich, being a former quarterback as well, had a big part to play in his development, and, you know, also bringing Foles in and acclimating him with the system as well. So that's basically what Reich did. Reich didn't call any plays. He would bring it into the quarterback because Peterson has a choice. He's got two channels he can communicate to. So instead of going to the quarterback, he went offense, defense. He would give the play call to Reich. Reich would then give the play call to the quarterback. I don't believe, and everything I've heard and read on this is that Reich did not have the ability to audible any of those plays. But that's basically what Reich did for the Eagles.
Interesting. Michael Kiss joining us, guys. New addition to BGN Radio and writer at Inside the Pylon. If you guys want to give us a question or you guys have a question for Mike, give us a shout at 929-477-3993. Michael, what should we expect from him when he gets to the Colts? I mean, would you expect him to call the plays, or we've got, you know, some information that he apparently has targeted Nick Sirianni, Chargers wide receiver coach, as his offensive coordinator. That tends to be, you know, something that we think is probably going to be up for, you know, interview process as well. But what would you be your expectations if Frank Reich was coming in to be your head coach? Would he be running the offense?
Just from my gut feeling and seeing the way that Doug Peterson's career arc has gone, where he wasn't calling plays in Kansas City and then he gets to Philadelphia and he's the main guy behind that, I would expect Reich to call the plays from that area and then, you know, let the defensive coordinator kind of do his thing. But I would expect Reich to be able to call the plays, and then anybody that he brings in would fill a similar role that he had in Philadelphia, kind of building off the model that I just explained to you for the Eagles, bringing that in to the Colts organization, because obviously the track record of success, especially this year, would prove that that's a solid model to work on. So he may parse out some stuff like the third down offense, the 20-20 stuff, and then have another guy work on the red zone offense. But I would expect him, just from a gut feeling, to call the plays and take over that responsibility.
And one more piece to that, would you expect him to kind of implement largely what the Eagles ran there in Philadelphia, or do you expect him to kind of have some offsets of what we saw with them?
I would expect a lot of the NFL to implement a lot of what the Eagles did. It's a copycat league, and you see what the Eagles did with it. I mean, I said this the other day. Years ago, when the Seattle Seahawks cover three defense came out, everybody wanted to have those press corners, that box hitting safety, that rangy free safety. I think the same thing, that revolution is going to happen on the other side of the ball, because that offense is predicated on making the defense wrong no matter what. Picking a defender and saying, I'm reading off you. What you do is my read, and you're going to be wrong no matter what you do. I can see a lot of offenses trying to install stuff like that, and Frank Reich being in the building for the cultivation of that offense, where that offense ran more RPOs than any other team in the league. They ran a lot of 12 and 13 personnel as well. I would expect him to bring that in and definitely try to recreate some of that magic. So I would expect that if I were a Colts fan, and I would embrace it too. It's a fantastic offense to watch. It's the Super Bowl tape, the All-22 tape of that game, is some of the most, as a football analyst, as someone that watches tape a lot and studies it, is some of the most intimidating tape that you're going to find, because there's so much going on and there's so much that is pre-snap reads, changing what happens post-snap, and it's incredible. But, yeah, I would expect to see Reich bring some of that into the Colts offense for sure.
There is a lot of interesting pieces to that offense. I mean, if we're assuming that Andrew Luck is back and healthy and running that offense, that is something that I think is going to help him. High percentage throws, he's going to be able to basically manipulate the defense without even really having to try. He's going to be able to have a lot of that be, you know, set up for him. A lot of the pre-snap stuff and a lot of the stuff at the snap is going to help him get some easy, like I said, high percentage throws. He's going to be able to manipulate, and he's going to be able to use, I think he's going to be able to use his running backs a little bit more effectively as well, because a lot of what they do there, like you mentioned, they did run a high percentage of RPOs, but they also, what people call RPOs was just simply shotgun play action. And I
play
think
action, yeah.
I think that a lot of that's going to help Luck as well, because I think that when you get Andrew Luck back there and he's able to get anybody out of position, it's going to be beneficial, obviously, for the Colts offense. And the Colts really need to find some running game and be able to get, you know, like guys like Marlon Mack and whoever else may step up to the plate and whatever they have in the backfield to get themselves going quite a bit more. Was there a certain thing that you saw out of the way that tell us, I guess, a little bit more about the Eagles and how they use and utilize their running backs to kind of build themselves inside of this offense?
So first of all, with the running game, that's helped because pre-snap, you're counting the box. You might have a play call in there and you see that you've got six in the box and you've got six defenders. Well, I can run on that. They bring the safety down. Okay, now I can pass on that. My main concern with Andrew Luck is not mental processing. He's one of the smartest quarterbacks in the league. My main concern with Andrew Luck is keeping him upright. And what that offense is going to allow him to do is make quick decisions, make decisions based on the leverage of the defense to either run or pass, make the right decision, which I believe he'll be able to do. And then also with those installs in that passing game, there are quick decisions for him to make and get rid of the ball and stay upright. The Eagles had a problem at left tackle all season, and they were bleeding pressures for a while. And all they did was just ramp up, you know, what they were reading, condense the set a little bit, help Halapuli Vatsivaitai on the left side. So I would really trust Andrew Luck in that system because he's so good not only processing pre-snap, but processing post-snap as well when things change. And it's going to help the running game because he's going to have the option to say, I've got five guys in the box. I've got five blockers. I'm just going to hand it off. I don't care if the wide receivers are running routes. I don't care what the play call is. I can run inside zone. I can run outside zone. So that's going to help the running game just by Luck being able to process that pre-snap and make that change.
So obviously, I mean, just with any offense in general, I mean, it's not like we're breaking any news here, but offensive line matters.
Yeah.
How instrumental and how pivotal was the quality of the offensive line that the Eagles had this year? How much does that kind of lead into the success of the offense in general?
It just gives them more versatility with what they can do because they're not pigeonholed into certain things. For instance, and this is a tip for the listeners as well, when I watch football, this is something I got from Pat Kerwin, Keep Your Eye Off the Ball. It's an excellent resource. I watch guard to guard for the first second of the play because we've all seen the quarterback hand the ball off a million times and it really doesn't do anything for you. If you watch guard to guard, watch the Eagles, and I guarantee you Kelce is going to take you where the play is going, or he's going to tip it off. Because the athletic linemen that the Eagles have with Kelce, Brooks, even Wisniewski in space is excellent. Lane Johnson could cover Kelvin Benjamin on a one-on-one. I can almost guarantee you that. But maybe I'm being a little hyperbolic there. But they can get out into space and work the screen game and work different aspects in that RPO system and different aspects of it to where, you know, they can do different things with the play calling. I don't know if the Colts necessarily have that in place right now. It would be beneficial for them to draft some more athletic interior offensive linemen to where they can start using more pinpull action, start using more power action, because it's not the Eagles run zone a lot, but they also run a lot of wham. They run a lot of trap. So you need athletic linemen to be able to pull those kind of things off, get them to the second level, and then also on the screen passes and things of that nature, get them out there into space to block up those linebackers.
Absolutely. So that sounds good, because I think that a lot of people are excited to see what Frank Reich is going to bring to the table. We've got a caller right now, guys. So thank you for jumping on the Colts cast from 240. What's going on?
Hello.
Hello, you're on the Colts cast. What's happening? Do you have a question for us, or do you have a question for Michael?
Yeah, what's up, man? I got a question for all of you guys, I guess. I called probably like a few episodes ago. I don't know if you guys remember me. I was the one talking about like Mike Vanderjagt and stuff like that. But basically the question I had was, with Frank Reich as our new head coach, where do you guys see the offense going in terms of personnel? Like, I feel like he wants to build something kind of like what the Eagles had going on, because what I've noticed is that like a lot of teams have been doing the RPO stuff, and like when you look at it statistically, the teams who were higher up in RPO generally had winning records. So I just wanted to know, who did you guys think, like, scheme wise he might bring over, or anything like that? Does that affect our draft also? Like, do you guys see us getting Saquon more now, you know, because of how the Eagles were running it with that dynamic running back, even though they had multiple? I just wanted to know.
Michael, do you see a specific, type that the Colts would need in any of those aspects, especially with their, you know, their skill positions?
Yeah, so let's bring it to, like, what roles that the Eagles had. You have Alshon Jeffrey, you're tethered to the line wide receiver. Maybe that would be your Moncrief. You've got Hilton, who you can play in the slot. He would play like that Nelson Aguilar role. You might look for another guy on the outside. I don't think they have that guy on the roster right now. Another deep threat to complement, you know, a little bit of a bigger guy. As far as the running backs, it's really a running back type agnostic system, because they run both power and zone. So, because you have Jay Ajayi, Corey Clement, LeGarrette Blount, but looking at the draft for the Eagles, you could bring in John Kelly, you could bring in Ronald Jones, you could bring in Mark Walton, you could bring in all these different types of back and utilize them in different ways. And you saw that with the system. It's so adaptable because they don't key on doing one thing well. You know, Alshon Jeffrey is the wide receiver one, but you try to take him away in the red zone, you try to bracket him in the red zone, or you try to bracket Ertz in the red zone, which the Falcons did and a lot of other teams tried. There's no one key weapon to get in. It's more scheme than it is, I'm going to force the ball to this guy. So really just finding dependable guys. You don't have to draft them high, just finding dependable guys that know what they're doing, that can run the routes, that can catch the ball. They don't have to be special. Just do what the scheme tells you to do, and just get yourself a collection of decent playmakers. No matter what type they are, they'll find a fit. But I would say deep threat on the outside, just to stretch, you know, the defense vertically, would be my main thing with the Colts. And you can correct me on that if I'm wrong, because, you know, you guys are the Colts experts, and I know that's what the Eagles like. That's why they drafted Shelton Gibson early in the year, even though he hasn't really panned out yet. But they were really looking for that deep threat to stretch things, and then they were going to work underneath from there. And then you got your big play threat on the outside, or your contested catch guy on the outside. And the running backs, like I said, could be whoever. They'll find a way to utilize them.
But they definitely have the different aspects of in the backfield, you know. And thank you for the question, caller. We appreciate it. It was an excellent question. But I, you know, like you said, with Ajayi and you know, the trio that they had back there, they definitely all had a role. And
yeah.
One of the things that we noticed, and I think that probably everybody noticed, was how well they got Aguilar to be a real part of that offense after being such a disappointment early, you know, in his, you know, young career. Is that something that we should expect him to, you know, find? Is there, because, and I guess maybe the perfect example in my brain right now is Dante Moncrief, who's becoming a free agent. We don't know what's going to happen with him. But if they were to bring that guy along, he's been injured at times, but he's also been one of those guys that just doesn't kind of impress. And, you know, he's just unimpressive as of late when he has been healthy. Is there an aspect to any of that that they can maybe do to move him around and get him to be a bigger part of this offense?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is the coaching because, and again, you look at the Eagles, and I try to translate to this Colts as what you should try to hope for from Frank Reich. You look at the Eagles, and Kelsey's speech was spot on. They had underperforming guys. They had embattled guys. People would trade rumors about them. Kelsey was rumored to be traded. Kendricks was rumored to be traded. Aguilar didn't have it. You know, they bring in Patrick Robinson, who almost got cut in the offseason. But, you know, from the offensive side of the ball, there were underperforming guys there that people had pretty much given up on. From my understanding, Frank Reich is a very good players coach, understands the player's mentality because he's been a player himself and is really effective communicating, getting through to those players, and then getting them to buy in. And that, for me, is a huge part of it. It's not just coaching them the technique and whatnot. It's being able to, you know, put your arm around a guy and have that guy take in what you're saying, to be able to relate to that player and get the most out of that player. You know what I mean? So I think that's going to have the bigger effect if what I understand from his personality is correct from the organization, then he'll be that guy to get more out of a player just because he's that relatable to him, but, you know, also a very good mind as well and can point him in the right direction.
Absolutely. Andrew, hop in here, man. What do you got?
Yeah, just a couple of things about Frank, and I've been really enjoying listening to you guys talk. It's when you look at the Chargers, when he was the OC of the Chargers, you look at the Eagles now, I mean, it's almost two completely different offenses because he's under McCoy and now under Peterson. I mean, and the biggest difference between the two, when I look at them, is the play of the offensive line. You guys were talking about that before, and it's, I mean, we don't have to, you know, start going over how important offensive line is. We know it's extremely important, but I think the biggest part, I think the Eagles, by the way, with the Cowboys, have had the best offensive line in football the last 2 years. And even without Peters, Vitae held his own in the playoffs. So this, that strong play of that offensive line, they are the number three rushing offense in the NFL, and they were so balanced on offense that it just opened up so many things in their passing game. And they have a really quick, rhythmic passing game, too, that with a balanced offense could be really effective against most teams. So I think I was just really interesting to see what he did with the Chargers and now the Eagles and, like, the difference between the two. And they're, like, almost two completely different offenses. So, I mean, you guys can speak more about the I mean, Michael can speak more about what the Eagles did the last couple of years, but I just noticed with the Chargers under Mike McCoy, just thought it was almost night and day. If you look at the All-22 tape of both teams, it's crazy. And, Michael, let me ask you, actually, does it bother you when everybody says that the Eagles are essentially just an RPO offense when really that's like 20 to 25% of their offense?
You can say college offense. It's not a pejorative to me. you know what I mean? Like Chris Harris Jr. called it a college offense. Well, they just got shredded by that college offense. He wasn't saying it as a knock on them. He was saying it as, man, they ran like a bunch of college schemes and they like tore us apart. It was that kind of thing. You can call it college spread with pro cons. It doesn't matter what you call it, as long as it's effective. The college game will eventually leak into the NFL, just like when Steve Spurrier was in Florida and he came to the NFL and he brought concepts in. They didn't work all that great, but you know what? A lot of things got left behind and stuck in the NFL. Same thing with Chip Kelly, the no-huddle offense that he met with Bill Belichick about before he even got into the NFL, and he brought him through that system. The Patriots used that to have one of the best offenses in NFL history. Like that type of thing, it's not a knock to call something a college offense. And that RPO offense is so effective in the NFL I don't care what you call it. So yes, and like you were saying, the thing with Reich, and then looking at his tenure with the Chargers, looking at his tenure with the Eagles, with the offensive line, they were definitely two different types of offensive line. Now you have to wonder, and even from just a overall construction of the offense, you have to wonder, you know, is he just going to take that Eagles plan and use that, or is he going to use a piece of the Chargers, what they use there? Is he going to use a piece from, you know, his time with the Colts way back and use that, and his time as a pro quarterback and stuff that he knows works? He's been in the league for such a long time, and he's been around a lot of different people, so you might not see an exact carbon copy of just the newest thing that he's been involved with. You might see an amalgamation of a lot of those things, but I would expect to see a small implementation at the very least of the Eagles, you know, offense, because it's so effective in the league right now. Like I said, it's copycat league. It's worked. He knows it. But yeah, I could still see them not going full bore that way.
It's kind of funny because in many ways, Doug Peterson and that offensive staff ran Chip Kelly's offense much better than Chip Kelly could. It's, you know, Chip Kelly, again, a lot more RPO stuff, more college spread type stuff. I mean, he was never under center, whereas the Eagles do go under center. So, yes, there are some differences, but in many ways, they ran Chip Kelly's offense better than Chip did. So I thought that was really funny this year.
Yeah, and the adaptability of that offense when you have a new quarterback or you don't have a running threat at quarterback. And when what happened was they go into the playoffs after they struggled the last 2 weeks. They ran a real vanilla offense. They went back to Nick Foles' tape under Chip Kelly, and they installed a lot of those concepts. That mesh that you saw on 4th-and-1 in the Super Bowl in their own territory was something that Foles ran time and time and time again in Philadelphia, and Foles was really comfortable with it. So having the staff like that that's able to adapt and adjust and play to the strengths of their players is really what put them over the top.
It's really interesting to hear that. I mean, just noticing the slight differences and alterations in the game plan from when Wentz was in there to when Foles was in there was barely noticeable, but you could see a little bit of it. It was pretty interesting. We do have another caller on here, and Michael, we appreciate you being on, man. If you can hang on for one more call, and we'll see what we got. From the 317, you're on the Colts Cast. What's going on?
Hey, this is Ryan again. I don't know if you guys remember me. I called about Nick Chubb a couple weeks ago and during the draft.
Welcome back, man.
Yeah, thanks. I had a quick question about two things. One was the what kind of players on the Colts right now do you think would translate to this Eagle-style offense? And the other question I had was about Matt Eberflus and what kind of players we have on the team that you think would do really well in that Tampa 2, I guess it's a modified Tampa 2 defense.
Yeah, there's a little bit of through and through with that. I kind of looked at that in some tape review today on Stampede Blue, and you look at it, and I think that we've got a lot of guys on this roster right now that are either going to have to do one of two things. They're either going to have to acclimate themselves, body type, learn how to maintain their burst and their speed and their active hands and all that good stuff at a different size. Most notably guys like Octavius Flingo. I mean, there really is a few of them that are going to be doing that. Terrell Basham's going to be a guy who's expected to be now a true 4-3 defensive end, whereas the outside linebacker role really didn't fit him last year. So there's plenty of those guys to go around. The interesting part to me is that they've got Malik Hooker back in the back, you know, who's a true center field safety. They've got Quincy Wilson, who's a good base cover three man corner. He can pretty much do it all. Loved him coming out. I thought he was, you know, way underutilized last year, even though he was injured a little bit. And so when you look at the team and you look at everybody involved with this, they've got some of what they need to make this transition into a 4-3. The real problem comes in when you realize that it's going to take time to implement everything and to get the rest of the pieces within that 4-3. Not only that, but kind of what they saw this year. You know, we brought in Simon and Sheard and some other guys, even a guy like Marcus Hunt, who way outplayed what his expectations were this year. Those guys, some of them were rotational guys, but depth could not be more important for this team going forward. And depth isn't going to come in one off season, in my opinion. You've got to build that. You've got to bring that. You've got to get guys comfortable with all of these situations. You've got to have linebackers that can flow downfield or flow upfield and be able to get into the backfield that are going to be. Because the one thing about a 4-3 that I noticed the most, and Michael and Andrew, you guys can attest to this, I would assume as well, that when you guys see that, the one thing that's very vulnerable in the run game is the edge. An internal, you don't have as many linebackers. You don't have as many guys that are trained to hit those gaps. But once that edge is you know, broken, so to speak, that's all over. I mean, that guy has very clear, you know, range to run up and down the sideline. He's going to have a lot of guys that basically what he's got to do is he's going to be taking on cornerbacks. And that's why cornerbacks have to be so good against the run in this system. And, you know, that strong safety, he's going to have to be as good or better than some of the linebackers in being able to wrap up and be an effective tackler as well. So there's a lot of things at play, a lot of pieces that are moving, I guess you could say, in this transition. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it all turns out and shakes out. But did you have anything else for us, man?
More specifically about the personnel, I was looking at the athletic profile of someone like, say, Barkevious Mingo, and like wondering, because he has some experience at inside linebacker, why not move him to the weak side position in 4-3, and then you have someone, say, John Simon, who's been more of a 3-4 outside linebacker. What if we moved him to Sam?
Yeah, I think that he's got a little – I think Simon's got a little more versatility than a guy like Mingo does. Mingo's one of those guys who's going to have to change his body type. He's just not big enough. He's got the speed. He's got the burst. He's got quick hands, and he's got the moves, but he doesn't have the size. And once he gets lined up against some of those guys, some of those man eaters, you know, he's going to have trouble.
Yeah.
This year, he was able to be effective was when there were stunting. When he's coming from the outside, shooting through the middle in an open gap, that's when he was getting his, you know, making his money, so to speak. So there weren't a lot of times he beat anybody off the edge just because of his size. There weren't a lot of times where he was able to, you know, be as physical as some of the interior offensive linemen that he was going up against. He really relied on scheming, you know, the defensive coordinator scheming him to get pressure. That was probably one of the biggest things that I noticed with him.
In that case, do you think he can make a transition to 4-3 outside linebacker?
I think that he could, but it would be really difficult. I think that if he stays on the roster, he's going to be relegated possibly to strictly a special teams guy. I think that I wouldn't say no, but you know, there's just only so much he can do with his build. I think, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because he has some experience at inside linebacker from his Patriots days, but inside linebacker in 3-4/4-3 is not the same as 4-3 outside linebacker. So
right. Yeah, I think I mean you know the guy. As far as I was concerned, I thought he played really well this year. And that's kind of why I say I wouldn't say no, because I wouldn't put it past him. For all the negativity that came after he was drafted and how he didn't quite live up to expectations, I wouldn't even say not quite. He just didn't plain old live up to expectations. That's why he's had to reinvent himself. You know what I mean? He's had to really push through and try to make himself into a player. And I think he did that this year. And if nothing else, he definitely took on the ability to prove that he's willing to bust his ass to do whatever he can to get there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that to me
he was
is
one of those guys I was really pulling for, because he was willing
too.
To bust his ass, set it on fire, and do pretty much whatever he could to get a roster spot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Hey, thank you for the call, man. We appreciate it.
Yep.
Michael, thank you for joining us, man. Sorry that didn't. I kind of assumed that one was going to be for you, but nevertheless, we really appreciate your time on the show tonight, man. Tell everybody where they can catch your work, man.
Yeah, catch me on BGN Radio at BGN_radio. Also, InsideThePylon.com. I'm doing work with their draft guide right now, and I do a lot of my X and O work for them as well.
Some of the best guys around that I've ever met at Inside the Pylon. Excellent guys, Mark.
Great
site. The whole bunch. Everybody in that group, very, very good guys, very knowledgeable. And check out their glossary, folks. If you guys ever hear anything, whether it be on this show or anything else, and you just don't know what it means, go check out their glossary, guys. They've got endless amounts of terms that you probably, some that you haven't even heard of, that is going to make you smarter throughout the process. So, Michael, excellent. And not only that, but a congratulations to you for moving on to BGN Radio. That's great news. And for those of you who don't know that, that's Bleeding Green Nation Radio. That's our cohorts over at the Eagles SB Nation site. So congratulations for that, my man.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. Thanks for having me on. Give me a follow at Michael Kist NFL. That's KIST. Thank you again, guys, for having me on.
Hey, thank you again, Michael. It was great
having you.
Excellent, excellent guest. I was glad to get Michael on here. He definitely was a guy that I knew would be able to kind of, you know, throw us into exactly what we needed to hear about Frank Reich. Andrew, what were your thoughts on what he brought, man?
About who brought?
Michael.
Oh.
To the tape.
I thought you were talking about Frank Reich or Michael. What Michael broke down was extremely informative and insightful. I mean, it's that Eagles offense is just like it is the future of the NFL. I think it's almost on the same level as what the spread did, you know, when it really flourished in the NFL. I think it's going to be that type of thing where every offense is going to have a decent part of their system be this RPO and this quick post-snap read type stuff. And I think, I mean, it's very tough to defend. It's very, very tough. And he put this together really, really well. It's tough to defend when you're essentially just picking on one guy and you have two options based on the two things he can do, you know? And it's in many ways extremely tough to defend. How are you supposed to defend a pass flying by your head if you want to take two steps up? I mean, that's just a specific example, but it's how are you supposed to defend that? I mean, you can defend a basic spread system by bringing more speed on the field, bringing more defensive backs on the field. But when you're specifically picking on a linebacker or a nickelback, it's when you're picking on one guy and just based on that specific player's tendencies, it's very tough to defend. So I'm very curious to see if Frank's going to bring that in. Michael broke it down great for us. I was really happy you brought him on to talk about the Eagles and all that. No, it's great. I'm just really curious to see what Frank does. And I think the draft will tell us a lot. There are so many draft strategies that the Colts can utilize, especially with so much cap space. You know, they can sign a lot of people in free agency too. I'm just really curious to see what he ends up doing.
Yep. I am too. I mean, there's a lot of things we'll talk about that after the break right now. But first, I'm going to tell you guys a little bit more about my man, Mike Ernest at Ernest Realty Group. Listen, folks, when it comes to buying or selling your home, knowledge is power. You need a professional on your team that can help you navigate the home buying or home selling process, and you need someone who can negotiate the best deal for you. Mike Ernest is that guy. He's a true pro who knocks it out of the park every time. Mike is making moves, guys, and he can help you move in to the house of your dreams. He's received numerous industry awards for being a leader in the Indianapolis real estate market. So when it comes to buying or selling your home, don't get burned by amateurs. Hire a professional. Whether you live in Indy or any of the surrounding communities, the Ernest Realty Group can help you. Call Mike Ernest at 317-285-9691 or find him online at homeprosindy.com. Again, that's call Mike Ernest at 317-285-9691 or homeprosindy.com. Very excited to have Mike sponsoring the show. Known this guy for a long time, like I've told you guys before. Excellent at his job. There's a reason he's winning those awards, and it's because he's kicking ass out there selling people homes that they love and that they want to be in. So let's get back to the Ernest Realty Group hotline. Got another caller here, Andrew. What's going on from 240? You're on the Colts cast. You there? not there. All right, man. Let's move on. Let's talk about who we're expecting to see. You know, there's some guys in free agency. There's some guys in the draft that I think would fit this. Now, I talked a little bit ago about, you know, let's do this real quick. The Colts at number three are widely expected, and I think that not only are fans expecting it, but I think that a lot of draft analysts are expecting it as well for the Colts to go after Bradley Chubb. Bradley Chubb, how's he fit into this 4-3 in your opinion, Andrew?
Well, there's a couple of things I think we have to discuss about a 4-3 before we get into the 4-3. What type of 4-3 system are the Colts going to run? Are they going to run the 4-3 over, the 4-3 under? You guys were talking before about how Simon or how Mingo are going to fit into his system. Mm-hmm. If they run, for example, a 4-3 over, or they're going to move the outside linebacker close to the line of scrimmage and outside the defensive end.
And that is what
the strong side. If that's the case, then Simon would fit perfectly as that over-type player. Mm-hmm. He can rush the quarterback. He can defend the run really well in that position. So if they play like that, then a guy like Simon fits in well there. And then you can put Chubb on the other side, or maybe a guy like Sherd, whoever you find to be a better maybe run stopper type guy who can kind of do both, rush the passer, stop the run on the weak side. If you do a 43 over, they do a 43 under, who do you want on the strong side? So Chubb, I think what we have to really look into moving forward is he a good run stopper? Can he stop the run, set the edge? We know he can rush the passer. I mean, he's got mm-hmm. great bend, great flexibility, good burst off the line, really long body. I mean, he was a nightmare for a lot of teams this year, but I think that's great and all, but can he stop the run and can he fit in the system? I mean, it depends on the system. So it's a bit of a tricky question to ask now.
Well, I definitely see him as a guy who can hold up against the run. Everything that I've seen, this dude is nonstop, balls to the wall. He's good against the run. He's excellent getting into the backfield. Both, you know, when he has to come underneath the offensive tackle and get some interior pressure, so to speak. I guess interior as far as opposed to getting it off strictly off the edge and beating the tackle to his outside shoulder. You know, there's a lot of things that this guy does. He's good at setting up the tackle outside, cutting inside of them, and getting straight to the quarterback. And he's got that speed and that burst to be able to get back in the backfield and not only just get after the passer, but to disrupt running backs and make them alter their path. I think that people underestimate how critical that is to a defense trying to stop the run. How many times do you guys see a guy get into the backfield, a running back being forced to stutter or take another path, and then, you know, somebody else comes and cleans him up? The problem
there.
You know
who does that better than anybody else? It's Khalil Mack, who might be one of the best run defending defensive ends in the league. And and if you watch him versus a guy like Von Miller, who many, you know, they argue against each other, those two guys. The biggest difference between those two is Mack's ability to defend the run and disrupt plays before they start sometimes. Miller's a phenomenal pass rusher, but he's not in the same league as Mack as a run defender. And it's an important thing that I think a lot of people miss out on when they look at edge defenders and defensive ends like that. They look at the sack totals, and they look at maybe even his pressures. But does he disrupt the play? Does he stop a running back from going 6-7 yards off the edge? Does he stop him from doing that and keep him inside 2 yards? Like it's honestly almost as important as rushing the passer. So I have to watch more of Chubb. You've watched more than I have on him. But I think he could fit for sure. I think it's also better that he's in a 43 than a 34. Because I think we'll see. I think from a pass rushing perspective, I think it's almost better to see him in a 43 with his hand down. And you know what? Some people, I don't think it's a huge difference to have your hand down or hand up, but you are further outside as an outside linebacker. You are standing up a bit more. Maybe you don't get that same amount of burst off the line. There are some differences. Most players can transition well, but there are some who don't. So me personally, I would rather see him in a 43 than a 34, even though it may not even make a difference.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the thing for me is that we're going to be able to see him also in that outside linebacker role occasionally too, in subs, I think. He's going to be a guy who's going to be asked to rush the passer as much as possible from that 4-4-3 defensive end. Don't get me wrong. But he is also a guy that if there's anybody else on that defense that has the versatility to sit in there at that defensive end, he is a guy who's got the – I mean, what do I want to call it, Andrew? He's got the – it's not even the versatility. He just doesn't care. He just wants to be on the field all the time.
Well, he's what they call a crazy motor.
Yeah, he's a field rat. He wants to be on the field as much as possible, and if that means, hey, I can get into coverage, I'm going to do the best to work my ass off to get into coverage and see how good I can be at that too. I just don't see this guy as being a guy who ever wants to come off the field. And before we go any further, I think we got our guy from the 240 back right now on the Colts Cast, Ernest Realty Group Hotline. What's going on, man? You're back on the Colts Cast.
Yo, what's up, man? I was just listening to what you guys were saying about Bradley Chubb, and I don't know if – is that the guy that's talking on the phone that you called in, is his name Mike, I believe?
Michael Kidd,
I'm not too sure. Yeah, Michael Kidd. Okay. Yeah, because I heard him say, like, he didn't watch too much tape on Bradley Chubb, and I actually started watching tape because of what I believe – is your name – I get the names confused. I'm sorry. Is your name Matt, correct? You're Matt.
Yep. And Andrew is the one that's talking about watching the tape
Andrew. Okay, Matt and Andrew. Okay. Yeah, I got it now for future reference. But
everybody should
Matt, like a few episodes ago, I remember you were talking about Bradley Chubb. So I was like, I already had watched about him, and they were raving about him already. But after I really watched his game tape, it's like, man, he's really, really like he's one of those players that like just jumps off the like camera, like. You literally see him everywhere. Like, there was this one play I remember seeing where, like, the running back had, like, made a cut on the outside and, like, was going to, like, the complete other side of the field.
Hey, partner. Hello?
I think you're covering up your phone or something. We can't understand you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, well, basically, I don't know if you heard what I was saying about the play, but, like, there's a play where the running back was, like, on the complete opposite side. And, like, Bradley Chubb was, like, he chased him from, like, his end. You know, like where his containment zone was, like all the way down there. And it's just like, I really see if we were to run that 4-3 over, I believe he said, that mm-hmm. Michael was talking about, I feel like he would be a perfect fit. Like, he's ridiculous. Like, from what I've seen, like, if the coach were to get him and he was just to be a bust, then you know what, man? Like, that is what it is. Then maybe everybody was just wrong. But what I've seen, like, I haven't seen too many players that jump off the, like, screen or the radar like that. Like, he's just so aggressive. And the way I see it is if we could have him on one end and then have Jabal Sheard on the other end, where we have that strong side edge-setting defender for both of them with their hands down, and then have, let's say, like a – you know, this is my dream, maybe like a David Irving with, like, John Hankins on the inside, I feel like the coach would really have something strong there, and that would make it easier for everybody else along the front seven to do their job.
Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting that what you're talking about is that Sheard, when in this 4-3, a lot of what the Cowboys did, which is primarily what we're probably expecting to see with Matt Eberflus calling the shots there on the defense as a defensive coordinator for the Colts, a lot of it is just pushing the line back. A lot of it is everybody go, all four in the front go. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier about the edge being vulnerable a little bit in this 4-3. The linebackers in this case are going to be absolutely pertinent to the success of this, against the run, because they need not only a lot of times they'll have one of the linebackers up near the line of scrimmage, like Andrew was saying a little bit earlier, talking about the over and under concept. But what they're going to be doing is they're going to have two linebackers in the middle of the field. Both of those guys are going to have to be excellent at determining between run and pass. And that's really difficult for them to do in play action when those are the two guys who are going to be counted on to drop into their zones, to drop into their coverage areas, and be able to make plays. Not only that, but they've got to cover man-to-man. A lot of those guys, I mean, they have to – and this is something else that I want to talk about, Andrew, and we'll do this while you're on the line too, my guy. What do we see Clayton Gathers doing? Do we see Clayton Gathers actually being that strong side safety, or do we see them maybe trying to use him as a will in this role? Andrew,
yeah.
What do you think?
It's funny because I think we're seeing in today's NFL there's more and more players who are becoming a safety linebacker hybrid that we saw with Deion Buchanan in Arizona. We see it with Chancellor in Seattle, and we see it with more and more players now. And Mark Barron just became a linebacker. So I think what we'll expect to see is a lot more of Gethers playing in the box. He's a great run defender. He can tackle hard. He's fast enough. Like he can really cut off a running back before anything gets going. So I expect to see him play a lot more in the box, especially if they start playing that 43 over and under. So I expect more run focused stuff. And when you got a guy like Malik Hooker, we saw him as a rookie last year. He shuts down one half of the field, and that was as a rookie. I mean, we saw him in that Seattle game. They threw away from him. And the one time they did throw at him, he got an interception, which was a little lucky, but still. I mean, they threw away from him, and most teams did. He can shut down a side of the field. So when you got a guy like that, you can afford to get a guy like Gethers, move him into the box, run support, or take away short to intermediate passes. So I see Gethers having a more of a run support role, like a guy like Chancellor or a guy like Buchanan, or Buchanan actually also became kind of like a linebacker too. So I see him more in the box.
Yeah, I think I do too. And one of the interesting things that I did notice also while putting that article together today on kind of, I threw together some clips, what are the different aspects and what these guys are going to be expected to do. The Colts, who are there, whoever's coming in, those corners are protecting the boundary. They're trying to push the receivers in to where the help is at. But that single high safety, that guy, Malik Hooker, man, he is going to be expected a lot this coming year. My man on the line, what are your thoughts, man? Do you think that they've got the pieces here to really start to build this 4-3 and cover a lot of cover 3 action on the back end? Or is this going to be a couple years, you think, before we get it all set in stone?
I personally believe we do, just because of what you said. The way I saw Malik Hooker, especially before getting hurt, was like he really did give me that Earl Thomas kind of vibe, where he's just like, his range is just ridiculous, man. Even on his first pick, like he got from like, I think like one side of the field to the other, and it felt like a blink. So I'm really happy that, you know, Ballard went ahead and got him. So I feel like we're good in terms of, you know, being able to bring Clayton Gathers more down to the line in that sense. So I guess in like our sub packages and stuff like that, we'd have Clayton Gathers, you know, more as a wheel linebacker and stuff, which makes us just that much more athletic around the field, which I'd love. It's just, at this point, I just feel like it's more so too about, like, free agency is really important this year, because it's like, we have to go and get a few players who, you know, who are just really athletic in what they do, like, you know, like a David Irving, or like a, you know, like a linebacker who's a, you know, an edge-to-edge linebacker, like a Zach Brown, or, you know, even Anthony Hitchens, who, you know, comes from Matt Eberflus's side when he was at the Cowboys. So that seems like that would be a really great fit, because he's really good at, you know, run support, and then he's really, you know, pretty fast on sideline to sideline stuff. He had a pretty high coverage rate too, so, and he's only 26. So I'm just hoping that Ballard, you know, recognizes that what we have already is pretty, like, we're in the right direction. Not saying we have everything, because we definitely have holes, but I feel like with Malik Hooker at the top, and then, you know, with Quincy Wilson, and hopefully we bring back Melvin, I don't know what their stance is on there, but I feel like we have really strong press, you know, athletic man-to-man corners. So, you know, it comes down to what we do more so on the front seven side, and, you know, maybe like another secondary piece or two. But I'm just hoping, yeah, we really address a lot of the front seven needs in free agency where it comes to like linebackers and stuff. Cause I know the draft's always there. Like, we can get a few players, but that's more so like, especially if we're not using our first, a high end pick on that, I feel like that'd take more time to develop. Whereas we can, you know, go get Bradley Chubb, and already I see him as a plug and play type of guy. Like, I love that guy. So I see him as a plug and play, you know, he comes in, he knows what he's doing. And then from there, go to free agency and get some people who are more experienced already at the linebackers role.
to, yeah, shorten up that side of the...
I'm with you, man, because I'm a big fan of Bradley Chubb, most definitely. And thank you for the call, man. We appreciate
it. No problem.
Excellent stuff from you, man. Thank you. So,
yeah, just one quick thing, if you don't mind, Matt. Just one quick thing on that.
No, right ahead. Go ahead.
I think the Colts moving forward, I think you're going to – I think they're still 2 years away from really seeing any dramatic gains on defense. And I think one thing, just by looking purely on the personnel right now, they are a great example of a team that's going to be really, really good in cover three and really, really, really bad in cover two. Because I think right now – you got in cover three, you got two solid corners who can play deep, maybe not that great underneath, but can play really deep. You got, hopefully they re-sign Melvin. I'm hoping this is based on Melvin coming back and Wilson,
right,
who for some reason Pagano hated, but actually was pretty solid on tape. And then you got your perfect center field type safety in Malik Hooker. So that's a perfect cover three right there, which is what the Seahawks, you were talking about before, the Seahawks ran that. You know, that cover three with the 43 over, or was it 43 over or 43 under, one of the two. And they ran a cover three, and it was that's how they shut down defenses, offenses. But then, for example, with a cover two, now you're going to be asking a guy like Gethers or Farley to cover half the field, which and the middle of the field being more open. So now you're asking for a little too much from a guy who maybe can't really cover that well too deep. So it's very... And that's just a basic cover two. Of course, there's many different ways of running a cover two, but the basic two safeties, half the field for each of them, cover two, is going to be something I think teams will expose more if the Colts run a cover two. I just mixed my words around. You know what I'm saying?
You're right. At that aspect of it, there's going to be a ton of holes in that defense. I mean, that's going to be picked apart by any good quarterback that the Colts go up against this coming season. It's just not a situation for success. It's just not. But there's guys in free agency, like we've talked about, Anthony Hitchens, he's 25 coming out of Dallas. He's more than familiar with this, but his, you know, I wasn't sold on what I've seen out of his coverage. He wasn't terrible. I just didn't think he was great. You know what I mean? And I think that the Colts, if they're going to make any significant strides this year, they need a guy who's great in coverage at that spot. I don't know about Avery Williamson either, but I've been impressed with him when I've watched his tape. He gets to
he's more of a thumper, I believe, Williamson. I haven't watched enough tape on him, but I have seen quite a few Titans games this year, and just by watching, they're all 22. He seems like more of a thumper type guy, but we'll see. I agree, though, that at the linebacker spot, if we're going to have three linebackers off the ball, and even if in an under or over situation, you're going to have guys who can cover. And that was actually an issue this year with our linebackers. I mean, Morrison's not good, in my opinion. He's not good, but he can at least come down hard and make some big hits, and he's a good special teamer, but he can't do anything in coverage. Bostic got better as the year went on, and I would like to see him come back, but he's still not that great in coverage. So now you leave yourself in a situation where it's like, which one of our linebackers is going to be able to cover Gronk? You know, I mean, most can't, but it's like, who can at least try? can cover an average type tight end? You know, like, are the Colts going to be that team that get exposed by every tight end, and you're going to be playing your fantasy tight ends against the Colts every week? It's like, what are they going to do with that off ball outside linebacker, and even the Mike linebacker spot is going to be such a really important position going into this offseason, because it is a really, really big need for the Colts. And they got away with it last year because of really strong defensive line play, but I don't think they're going to be able to get away with that this year.
Right. And there's a guy that I think that we could probably look at, and he's not a guy who's going to probably do a lot as far as, you know, turning people's heads and stuff like that. But there's an interesting guy that came out of Jacksonville, which is similar to the cover three system that the Colts are getting ready to implement up in the back. But it's a similar front seven as well, Lorente McCray. Not, like I said, only played 13 games last year. Not bad. 27 years old. He's not a guy who's really in that young category. He's definitely not a guy in the old category. But he gets to the quarterback. he's pretty solid all the way through. He's an outside linebacker, but I think that he would fit in their scheme certainly as a rotational piece.
Yeah, he's a former Bronco guy, isn't he, McCray?
I think so. I can't remember who he got drafted by, to be quite honest with you.
I think he went. I can search it up now, but I'm pretty sure he went to Florida and he played for the Broncos. I think it was a late round pick or something.
Okay.
I don't really know. Yeah, there's another guy. There's a couple of guys. I mean, we were talking before about the Eagles players. If there's any guy who would come over, there's only two names that really jumped out from their free agency list, and that was Trey Burton, who the greatest passer rating in the history of the NFL playoffs with that pass. But he's a great, great, great number two tight end. You want to talk about a guy who's so athletic for a tight end position and can catch? I mean, that's what you need to put a guy like Doyle on your team who can do it all. You need a guy who can, you know, be able to go deep and make those, you know, tough catches, and it can be a threat down the field. And with Frank Reich coming over, you're going to see a lot more of two tight end set stuff. He'd be the perfect guy to come over. And another guy I thought, just he doesn't know, I mean, he doesn't know the defense per se, but a Nigel Bradham, who had a great Super Bowl, actually, and actually was great during the season, playing next to Michael Kendricks. But just two really solid players. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're right. Kareem Martin's another guy that I've thought of. He's out of that Arizona system as well. They ran a little bit of that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he could be a possible guy that they could bring in as well.
Good rotational piece, Martin.
Yeah.
He's a really good rotational piece for them. I remember him.
Yep. Wouldn't be a massive contract by any stretch of the imagination. Would come in, knows the system, would be a solid piece, in my opinion. Like you said, a rotational piece. And that's, you know, they need that. Like I said earlier in the show, the Colts could not need depth more than they do right now at all of these positions, guys that know what they're doing.
For sure. And you look at the contracts they had this year. I mean, the best players they had on their team this year, I mean, Al Woods, $2 million a year. Marcus Hunt, $2.2 a year. I mean, all these guys they brought in that had really nice impacts were guys who didn't exactly burn your salary cap. So, like, Hankins was great, but he was $10 million a year. I mean, you expect that. But guys like, again, I've always said this, Hunt shocked me this year. But these small contract guys are the ones that make the biggest impact. So, you're right. You know, it's even a guy like Kareem Martin, who might not ask for a huge contract, he might have a huge contribution on the team, just like Al Woods did this year.
You know, there's another guy who actually is on the roster right now that I wonder kind of how he is going to fit into this transition. Now, I know that if you guys have listened to my show for any amount of time whatsoever, that you guys know my kind of affinity for Jeremiah George. I think that he's kind of perfectly set to be a piece in that linebacking core because he can cover. He's also a meaty man when it comes to going after guys on the run. And I think that he's got kind of the tweener build, you know, a guy who can do kind of both. And I think that if he can maybe bulk up just a little bit and get himself into great playing shape just the same throughout the offseason, I think he's a guy who could probably withstand the transition at that position, because right now he's pegged as an inside linebacker, whereas the Colts were in a 3-4. This transition to a 4-3 is going to change a lot of his responsibilities. And to be fair, you know, he was a guy who was kind of scheme versatile to begin with. When they were in their subs, he was in there, you know, kind of running the outside linebacking role to a point. And so I'm kind of interested to see where he lands. Like I said, a lot of people will say, now you just like Jeremiah George. And that's kind of true. I'm not completely discounting that at all. However, I do see that he's a guy who is a high-level guy. We saw how good he was on special teams as well. And he got himself into the rotation, and probably not enough, to be quite honest with you, for as well as he played in coverage. So I'm kind of excited to see where some of these guys end up. Like we talked about earlier, you know, that there is obviously some guys who aren't going to make the transition, so to speak. They're not going to be guys who, I guess, stay they might stay on the team, but you know what I mean. They're not going to be impact guys. They're not going
impact
to be,
guys. Yeah, yeah.
They're just not. And some of these guys are going to go. Nobody, in my opinion, I mean, we're not going to. I don't think that anybody would be surprised if Antonio Morrison's not on the roster next year, right? I mean, would you?
No, I've never been a fan of him either. I just think, in general, I think this year is going to be a massive change on every level. I don't think this is going to be the team where, you know, when we saw the change from even Pep Hamilton to Chud, it wasn't a massive change. You know, I think the change we're going to see this year with Eberflus on defense and Reich on offense and whoever he brings as his OC, I think it's going to be a massive change. And I would not be surprised to see – I would be happy at the end of the next year if they had the type of season that the Eagles had last year where they were like 7-9, 8-8, that area. But people were like, oh, they're going to be very good. They showed a lot this year. They have a lot of potential. And then they win the Super Bowl next year. I'm looking, I think next year it's more, yes, you want to win, you want to go to the playoffs, you want to go to the Super Bowl, but for me personally, I want to see how this team performs more, right. Almost more than, and some people may think I'm crazy for saying this, and more than the wins and losses sometimes, because I don't think next year's team, unless they go crazy in free agency and kill in the draft, has a chance in hell to win the Super Bowl. And I just don't. And I don't think they're going to beat. I don't think they're going to beat the Steelers. I don't think they'll beat the Brady and Belichick. I don't think they'll beat the Jaguars. Even the Texans and Deshaun Watson are scary. And then they got the entire NFC to deal with. Next year, I think it's extremely important to focus in on how the team plays in general. Are they losing 2-point games, or are they right. beating the easy teams and getting murdered by the good teams? It's that type of season for me next year. It's like the Eagles were last year. I think if you ask, I wish I would have asked Michael this actually, but if you would have asked any Eagles fans, I think they would have said all the exact same thing. We didn't make the playoffs, so it was disappointing, but they showed a lot this year. And that's the type of season I'm looking for the Colts next year.
Yeah, I agree. And let me just, and kind of while we're in the process of this, think about this, guys. DJ White, cornerback. The Colts claimed him off of Kansas City, claimed him off waivers from Kansas City.
Georgia Tech guy.
Yes. So there's a guy that Bauer brought in. Okay. Another guy, Jermaine Grace, inside linebacker, 6'1", 223. Got the size and the length. He's got the speed. He's not that heavy of a guy. He was out of Miami. He was a rookie last year. Anthony Walker, where does he fit in? Is he going to be good enough in coverage to where he can fill one of these linebacking roles? And that would be terrible if not, because, you know, Bauer just drafted him last year. There were some other guys that were brought in. Think about Grover Stewart. Think about the rotation here. Hassan Ridgeway, one of these guys might have to be out, right? I mean, even a guy like Grover Stewart who was brought in last year, or maybe even Hassan Ridgeway, a guy who has shown that he can play in many, many schemes. They brought in Joey Embu last year. I think they claimed him off of waivers as well. So there's a lot of guys on this roster that Bauer brought in late in the season. Ronald Martin, another guy at safety, 6'2", 220. What's he offer? What does he realistically offer? You know what I'm saying? I mean, these guys are all guys. Travis Ross, that's offensive, and I'm loving him, so I'm not even going to go into him right now. But I think that, you know, a guy like him, with his size and his speed, I think that they think he's very much a I think that they feel not now I don't want to get too hyperbolic here, but his length, his ability to catch the ball, and his speed, I think that they really feel he's a mold of a Kelsey, like a poor man's Kelsey, so to speak. And so there's just a bunch of guys that they brought in that they really do have, you know, They have hope for. KJ Brent was another guy, 6'3 receiver, 200 pounds.
They brought in some big guys. They brought in some big receivers in the last couple of years too.
Right. And it just, a lot of this to me is exciting. This is exciting because I know he brought in these guys for depth. Was he bringing them in for depth last year? Or was he bringing them in for transition, not necessarily thinking 4-3 ahead of that? I mean, that was way ahead of, you know, the time. But, I mean, was he bringing them in?
Versatile guys in general.
Yeah.
Guys who they know it can be versatile.
Absolutely. And that's where I'm heading with it. I think it's just an exciting time right now. And like you said, our by next year are going to have to kind of mimic this year, because as bad as the Colts were, they really didn't even live up to minimal expectations as far as I'm concerned. I don't think anybody would say that the Colts would win, you know, just a few games. I think that everybody thought the Colts would probably be right around 8-8. But then again, I'm pretty sure that I even picked them to win 10 games because I thought Andrew Luck would be back for at least half the season. So that is going to throw a wrench into everything.
Well, they blew a lot of games this year, and we've spoken about this before. They blew a lot of games this year. They just underperformed even with Brissett. It was an embarrassment this year. So it'll be interesting to see. I think to answer your question about the defensive line and those players, I think the one key player in all this is going to be Henry Anderson. Will he play inside as a 3-tech or even as a 1-tech? Because he's very versatile. Or will he play on the end, like a Red Bryant was with the Seahawks several years ago? Or like we've seen around the league now where they put those big defensive tackle-like guys at the end spot on the maybe the – like an example, again, to go back to my 43-over example, will they put him on the weak side as a defensive end to really defend against the run and then stack that strong side so they have more better pass rushers on that side? It's going to be very interesting to see what they do with him. Because if he stays inside purely as a 3-tech role, then somebody's got to go. It's going to be Stewart, or it's going to be Hassan. It's going to be somebody's got to go. There's just too many bodies there. But if they're versatile with him and they want to move him to an end spot, then it opens up a lot of possibilities inside, and now they can keep more guys in general.
Right.
So that's a big change on the defensive line. And offense, and actually, I just remembered this now, and it's on the same lines we were talking about on the offensive side. There are two players that I'm really thinking, like really in, like looking forward to seeing on the offense, and it's not T.Y. It's Doyle.
Yeah.
It's Doyle because I see Doyle just being like a Zach Ertz type guy, not as good probably. But he's in the same league, I would say, in many cases. He's a catch machine. He blocks really well. He's like in that same league. So I'm very curious to see what Reich does with him. And the other guy, and this is literally on one play. It's the outside zone play. I'm from shotgun to the strong side, and I want to see what Marlon Mack does with that. Because Marlon Mack this last year was phenomenal on those outside runs. And the Eagles, and one of the staples of their offense, is that outside zone. So I'm very curious to see what a guy like Marlon Mack does when he breaks to the outside and gets an open space. I'm very curious to see what he does. And one last thing, and not to go too long about this.
No, you're good.
I'm very curious to see what a guy like Ryan Kelly does. Ryan Kelly is not a great zone blocker. Good man guy because he's a bull. He doesn't even have a neck, you know. So he's a good man blocker, but can he move in space? Can he be a gap and pull type guy? Can he move well in space, which is very important from a center position in a Frank Reich offense? If they're going to do the same offense as last year, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Kelsey's the best center in football, if you ask me, because he can do everything. He's so good in space. I mean, you saw they highlighted him like 5 times in the Super Bowl. I mean, he had been a huge Kelsey fan for his entire career. I mean, and he's just so good in space. He's strong. He opens up holes. But the best thing about him is he's a great, great, great zone blocker. Can Ryan Kelly be that? Because a whole zone system is they're not going to be a completely zone reliant system, but if they want to be an effective zone blocking team, it starts with that center position, because he's going to have to do a lot of that dirty work. That's all I have to say about that. Thanks for the rant there.
And the thing about that is that is ultimately why the interior offensive line is such a major need this offseason. You know, because you don't want to have to have him. You don't want Ryan Kelly to having to rely on the guys. You don't want Ryan Kelly having to go and kind of clean up the messes that the guys on either side of him are making. You know, he's got to be able to take care of his responsibilities. You get in a solid guard there. You know, we're talking Norwell, but I mean, looking at a guy in the draft, I mean, of course you say Quentin Nelson, and you bring him in, and you've got really solid interior right there. It looks
phenomenal. And you know what? I'll tell you what. If Denzel Good is playing next to Ryan Kelly next year, hold your breath, because he's going to scare the crap out of you. That guy is, like, the offensive line. It brings me back to something I was thinking about earlier today. It's what are they going to do in the draft? And there's so many different things they can do. Honestly, if they can say to themselves, let's go defensive free agency and let's go purely draft. If they went in the draft and they did Quentin Nelson, Orlando Brown in the second round, a guy like a receiver like Anthony Miller in the third round, and then a running back in the fourth round, and they signed a couple players in free agency, I would like that. And if they did the exact opposite, where they got offensive guys in free agency and defensive guys in the draft, they go Chubb, Rashawn Evans, a corner, and maybe another linebacker, I would also like that too. So it's I think people need to realize, because, you know, we see our fans, and every time we post a mock draft, we get about 600 comments saying that we all suck, we're stupid, and I should go back to figure skating. So you get a lot of different opinions, but the reality is the Colts have so many different needs right now, and especially, and probably more needs now that they're going to be transitioning, that you can't address everything in one draft. And you can't really address all these needs in one offseason. They're not at that state in, you know, they're not at a great place right now. They're in a transitioning, rebuilding phase in many ways. So I think it's important that people need to understand that they can't address all the issues. So if they went all offense this year, even no defense, even if they did no defense, they want to save their money, they don't want to do free agency, and it all ends up being offense and draft, I would not be too upset with that, because it's them just focusing on one problem right now and a different problem another time. You can't address everything this offseason, and I think people need to realize that. Ideally, I'd love Chubb. I think from what I've seen of him, he's great. We can talk about prospects all day. But I think the one message I just want people, whoever's listening and anybody, just to understand, is the Colts have so many needs and so many problems right now. Like, not problems, I should say, but so many needs and so many areas that need to be upgraded, that it's so they can't address it all in one off season. And that's all I want to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, if you get you almost have a little tone of Forrest Gump in there, and that's all I got to say about that.
Really? I'm the Canadian here. Well, how does that work out?
Not the way you said it, but, you know, you got the lingo down, though, at least. I mean, but you're right. You're totally right, because I don't
I know I'm going to watch Forrest Gump tonight. You know that, right? Like, I'll be, like, rewinding. What was he saying? What are you trying to say about that?
I think that people have to, like you said, they have to understand that you can only address as much as you can. I mean, there's limits to it. You can go in and go, not all offensive line, obviously, but if you get a guard and a tackle in the draft, even if you've got another guard in free agency, there's nothing wrong with it. Just understand.
No, there's not.
They're focusing on problem areas to make them deep if they've got the opportunity to do it. The biggest thing that they have to focus on right now is getting what they can. And if when opportunities present themselves, they've got to take advantage of them, plain and simple. Regardless if that means that they've got to double down on a certain position, regardless if that means that they've got to do more than one position, like along the offensive line, you know, two edge rushers in the first two picks, everybody's going to be like, oh, they're definitely going in draft, while, you know, their next door neighbor is saying, man, what the hell are they doing? They're not getting any linemen, you know, or something like that. I mean, look,
exactly. There's always going to be someone complaining. They can trade their entire future for the first five picks in the draft and just nail each of them, but you're still going to have someone who's – there's always someone who's going to point out something. You know what I mean? Like, no matter if you – I shouldn't have used that example, but let's just say you – and they nailed this draft. Someone's going to say, well, it's good, but they should have done this. So the reality is no matter what they do, no matter what they do, there's going to be someone that's going to complain. They're going to call me an idiot. They're going to call you an idiot. So you got to be ready for it.
And you know what, Andrew? Most of the time, those people complaining about certain picks, they're us. That's us. That's what we do.
Yeah. that's also true. That is also very true.
Oh, I love that aspect of it. That's great. Guys, this has been a great show, man. I've really enjoyed it. Big thanks to Michael Kiss for hopping on the show. It was nice to get some insight from him. It was nice to be able to get some of your guys' calls. And, all in all, we really appreciate it. Andrew, it was great having you on the show again. Thank you for joining
me, man.
Always
good to be on, buddy.
Absolutely. Thank you guys all for listening. We're getting out of here right now. But we'll talk to you guys midway through the week right here on the ColtsCast.